This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
To me, this is a good test all the way around, particularly for the Red Sox and for Price. Like, I always look at it from this perspective first. The Red Sox are 13-2. They've played garbage for the most part on their schedule. Their opponents have been absolutely wretched combined. I think I said yesterday, 19-41, I think they are, in their 60 games opponents are. They're dreadful. They've played awful, awful teams. Nonetheless, 13-2 is 13-2. It's hard to do that. So now here you go. You're going up against the second-best team in the American League. You have, thus far, you have the whole David Price story on top of it, having left the game like he did with the issue in his hands and the cold temperatures in Boston, and Ohtani on top of it. So if you're ever going to stay up for a West Coast game, this is the one to stay up for, particularly one in the month of April.
Shohei Ohtani, as a hitter...
He's the real thing, man, I'm telling you. He is for real.
As a hitter... Has a .367 batting average, has an .1191 OPS, has got 3 home runs in 8 games, 11 of 30 in 8 games, with another double and a triple. So he doesn't just hit, he drives the baseball. As a pitcher, 2-0 with a 2.08, 18 strikeouts, 2 walks.
In 13 innings.
That is awesome.
It is awesome. And look, I think he's a better pitcher than he is a hitter, at least... As of right now, I don't know what that'll turn like over time. But as a pitcher, he's dominating. I mean, he is dominating. He throws 99, 100 miles an hour, and he's got a filthy split-fingered fastball.
So when he pitches, they don't hit him.
Correct.
Which...
That's dumb.
Come on! DH someone else. DH your crappy catcher or something, or your light-hitting second baseman. Whoever, you know, don't tell me that Ohtani's the worst bat in their lineup. He's one of their best bats in their lineup.
No, so the only issue is that if he comes out of the game, then you're sort of stuck.
Just let me stop for a second. If he comes out of the game, you're stuck. Well, you have to make a double switch.
Yeah, except I don't think you can do it in the American League that way.
You can't? Why not?
I'll alter the rules then.
I don't think so, because once you...
Why can't you double switch?
Because once you put the DH in the field, the pitcher spot has to hit.
Once you put the DH in the field, the pitcher spot has to hit.
Yeah, I don't. It's a good question.
I'm sort of thinking this live on the air, but I just got to think about it.
I don't think he can do it.
Well, then I'm with Murray. Change the rules. Let the guy hit, for the love of God.
Hey, listen, I would love to see it. Don't get me wrong. I told you. I hope that this guy ends up being some sort of, you know, modern day, for lack of a better comparison, Jackie Robinson, a barrier breaker, who opens the eyes of major leaguers everywhere, major league evaluators everywhere, and says, you know what? We can do this with Madison Bumgarner. I've said that to you a million times. We could have done it with Mike Hampton way back when he hit.
Or just these pitchers who are, I mean, let's face it, a lot of pitchers become pitchers. They're still the best athlete on their team or the best player on their team, but there's more impact there as a starter or more money there as a starter or a greater future as a pitcher, so they pitch. But when they were 13, they were probably the best player on their team.
Correct. They could develop him in both areas. Hell, if he didn't have some of the issues, that Rick Ankiel could have done it. He's another one, right? Like, to me, you can think of a million guys, pitchers who can hit. And
CC Sabathia was
sure
excellent.
Like a lot of them. You go right down the line and say, if that guy's in the American League, he could DH on days he doesn't pitch. Easily he could do it. And hell, guys could play a position.
Let him hit the days he does pitch. If you
God forbid baseball do something fun.
If you put the DH in the field, the pitcher has to hit.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And so, again, you know, I've never encountered it in the American League, so you might be right. Maybe you can double switch and I'm missing it. But I don't think that the same thing applies in the American League. And so, look, I find the guy compelling. I think he's great for the game. I think that, I told you yesterday, I read some comments from Chris Sale. We played him last night on the Baseball Reporters. And they're not, you know, groundbreaking or earth-shattering. But Sale talks about Ohtani and sounds like a fan. Like, you know, how do you not appreciate what this guy does? And I just think it's a great thing. Like, you know, think about what it's going to be like when this guy's contract comes up. How do you pay him? Like, what's the number? You can't just pay him on a pitcher salary.
Well, you find the highest paid player in the game and give it to him.
I mean, if he ends up being a guy that can legitimately hit .300 with some power, with a 900 OPS or something.
And a 2.5 ERA.
Awesome. And I'm telling you, I think he's a Cy Young candidate right out of the gate watching him. I think he's that good. So to me, the Angels are on the map now because of him in the rotation.
So I love it that David Price is going tonight. Mr. Mr. Tingly Hands.
Well, I want to see it. This is the thing. I mean, there's so much, you know, on this game because it's they haven't really played anybody either. They've played the two big teams that they played are Cleveland and Texas, but they've also beat up on Kansas City, who sucks, and the A's. So this is a good test for them. But, yeah, I'm pumped to see Ohtani. But as far as price is concerned, I want to see if he bounces back from frozen finger gate here. I mean, he lasts an inning there. Did he tap out? Is this a real issue? You know, if he's fine, he looked like he did the first couple of starts. I don't think we have anything to worry about. But there is still something odd there.
Oh, totally with Price. And you know, so there's a redemption there thing there with him. And now let's say that he goes out tonight and loses. They've lost three games, and two of them are ones that he started. You're a $31 million man. After all the promise of spring training and the promise of the first two starts, it all takes a U-turn with his fingers getting cold in that game, and then all of a sudden you go out and lose to Ohtani. And, you know, the other thing is, if I've got this right, I think Ohtani has faced Oakland both times he's pitched. So he's not exactly going up against Murderer's Row either here.
Yeah, he's only given up four hits in 13 innings he's pitched.
Now, look, in the second one, he had a perfect game through six, right? So I just think, I mean, the stuff is real. It's real, man. He's legit. Now, the breaking ball, I think, needs a little bit of work, but the other two pitches, legit. I mean, I think he's a stud. As a pitcher, I think he's a stud. As a hitter, I'm not totally convinced yet.
Okay, Price Ohtani tonight. That should be a good one. There was one more Red Sox item that caught your eye. It was a story on NBC Sports Boston by Evan Drellick. Evan Drellick writes, or the headline says, Dave Dombrowski deserves credit for Sox hot start no matter how expensive the roster is. Dombrowski deserves credit for the Sox hot start no matter how expensive the roster is. Let me just read you one excerpt.
Sure.
Drellick writes that the Red Sox 13-2 start is owed to many people, many choices. New manager Alex Cora has the right brew so far, and new hitting coach Tim Hyers is the conductor on the launch angle train. There's good health and improved chemistry and the Lavangi advantage. Daniel Lavangi, the new pitching coach?
Yep.
He says, you're even witness some good luck. Three grand slams to begin the season compared to zero for all of 2017 has something to do with the baseball gods. Yet, no matter how you build your pie chart for April's bloom, the boss who put the pieces in place, Dave Dombrowski, needs credit. Who hired the manager after all? Right, Strelick?
John Henry.
To which I was going to say, not Dombrowski, that was Henry's hire. Who presides over all of this?
John Henry.
Okay, so your thoughts on that story.
Okay, so I just think that, to me, Dombrowski gets like almost no credit or zero credit. I look at the team on the field and say, he didn't draft Benintendi. Bradley wasn't his. Betts wasn't his. Bogarts wasn't his. Who are we going to give him? Mitch Moreland? Eduardo Nunez? Fine.
David Price.
Devers isn't his. The sale and Price deals, does that require some sort of, you know, exceptionally intelligent GM or creative GM?
Not Price.
To go out, not even Sale. He didn't trade his prospects for Sale. So, like, I look at the, he didn't trade his prospects for Kimbrel. He hasn't traded his prospects. He's built nothing here. All he did was use other people's pieces and someone else's money to go out and get established players. And the young players on the team came from someone else's operation. So, to me, if you're going to give a guy credit for building a team, it's going to be a guy who drafted and developed, then identified the players he wanted to keep and traded the other ones for, you know, for accomplished talent. Along the lines of what Sweeney has done with the Bruins. And even that's not a perfect 100%. But at least in that one you can say, all right, traded some of his own guys for Rick Nash, brought the other ones up, plugged them into the lineup, you know, changed coaches, went with his guy, fine. In this case, I don't even think you can give Dombrowski the manager. I don't think Dombrowski would have hired Alex Cora. I think that was a Henry hire. So I look at the whole thing and say, I give Dombrowski like zero credit.
If anything, he should get more scrutiny for bringing in guys that seem broken down or have big red flags in terms of injury. Price being one of them now with this thing with the fingers, and he had him in Detroit. What, you never knew about that? Tyler Thornburg, Drew Pomeranz. Ah, no, we'll just make the deal. Oh, he's broken down. Do you want to go back in the deal? No, we're good. And the manager, I'm not giving him credit for either. Why is Tony La Russa here? It feels like so he can be a buffer or have one of these old-school baseball guys.
Now, if you want to say to me that some of the smaller things they did in the second half of last year were fruitful acquisitions.
Nunez.
Fine. I'll give you Nunez. I don't think he's a game changer, but if you want to say that Dombrowski has built a nice, deep positional roster, Mitch Moreland on the bench, potentially Nunez in the long term, fine. Yes, I'll give you that one. Is that why they're 13-2? I mean, In August, the depth might matter. I don't think it's mattered a little bit at the beginning because some guys have missed a game here and there. But the Bogaerts absence, it's not like the guys who have stepped in and done this, you know, run producing job where Holt all of a sudden is three homers since Bogaerts went out. And even then, Holt's not his guy either. Like, how much talent does it really take to go out and get Craig Kimbrell, David Price, and Chris Sale, let alone J.D. Martinez? Does that take any talent at all?
As an evaluator, you mean, yeah.
Yes. Like, any one of us could make those moves, especially if I give you the prospects to make the trade. Here you go, Mike. Here's Yoan Moncada. Go get me Chris Sale. Like, I can make that trade. You can make that trade. Murray can make that trade.
We all could have signed David Price.
Oh, it's a piece of cake. Please, he's done nothing so far. Nothing. Not really. I mean, I'm being a little harsh on him. He's done a little. Okay, but the reality is, there's no, like, huge move that you look at. Even Cashman with the Yankees, you could look at and say, boy, that D.D. Gregorius trade gets better every day, doesn't it? Every time you see that guy, you're like, what a deal that was for the Yankees. Smart move. Does Dombrowski have one of those?
Well, maybe Pomerantz.
Maybe.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force drum! We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger and
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
My whole hand was, didn't have, you know, any feeling in my fingertips. That's something I've felt before.
We don't know if it was a cold weather or there's an issue there, but he, you know, he couldn't grip the ball.
Can't feel my hands because they're freezing. And jerks like Mez, they think that I am lying. But I just cannot pitch on colder days. And that's a bitch move, is what I hear all you saying. Last year I was great as a reliever. All I heard was cheers instead of boos. But now you're gonna turn on me again. I can't explain it, you would not understand. I just have really cold hands.
My whole hand.
And I can't pitch because they've become uncomfortably numb.
Good job, Murray.
The cold.
I mean, it's going to be kind of annoying. I hope that he looks how he looked the first couple of games. But if he goes out there and he looks like that, there is a small part of it. It's going to be kind of annoying. So we're going to have to worry about cold weather for the rest of the year or come the postseason, you know, come October. If it's going to be a David Price start, we're going to be nervous going into it because how long is he going to last? Because old numb hands can't deal with the fact it's under 40 degrees.
Well, I mean, I'm with Maz. I mean, can we at least look into this? If he has the, is it Raynaud's? What's it called?
Raynaud's syndrome.
Raynaud's syndrome. Like, that's an issue.
It is totally. Again, like, I would like to find out more. Somebody apparently did a story on it at the end of last week that followed up with him, and he said, yep, it goes back to, you know, when I was a kid or whatever.
Does he have Raynaud's?
So it wasn't specified in the story by name, but it sounds like it. And what I would like to know is, did the Red Sox know this? Did they know? I mean, how do you sign a guy with a bad October history for $31 million a year knowing that his hand goes numb in October? Like, you know, to me, that would be like a red flag. You know, again, especially if you had him in Detroit.
Something worth investigating.
Sure, absolutely. To me, that's worth asking.
Okay, back to your calls here. Cam is in the car on Shohei Ohtani. Yes, Cam.
Yeah, guys, I know he's like kind of an attraction now, and it is fun to watch him. I'm looking forward to watching him tonight, but I don't see how with that story that came out, I don't know, it was like yesterday or 2 days ago, where he actually had somebody go ask his fans to quiet down when they were cheering for him so he could focus at the plate. You know, when I hear something like that, I'm so glad that the Red Sox, you know, didn't stay away from him, but maybe he stayed away from the Sox. Cause
so hold on, you're glad you're glad this guy's not on the Red Sox?
Yes, because I only imagine how that would play if he was in Boston and he had somebody walk up into the stands at Fenway and ask the fans to quiet down so he could focus at the plate. You know, he'd get eaten alive. It would kind of reminds me of like a Adrian Gonzalez type situation where, yeah, he was good, but his personality just would not fit in Boston.
Okay.
I'm excited to watch him tonight, but I'm glad he's not in Boston.
I understand that piece, right? Maybe that would be something to keep an eye on. But why would you want Babe Ruth back on your team?
Well, you traded him once.
I mean, I agree. I say just as you can't. Where would you put Babe Ruth? Like in a game and a sport that is just dying for compelling figures and players to watch and guys to latch onto. You don't want this guy?
Oh, please. How could you not want him? And the whole thing with the crowd, I did not know about. I mean, I just saw it on the call screen a second ago, and I dialed up the stories. There were a couple of girls sitting behind the dugout in Kansas City. They were cheering for him, and he asked the security to go over and tell him to stop.
Is that true?
Yeah, because he likes to focus on hitting. This, too, will be a problem in October, if and when they get there. But, you know, we'll worry about that one later. I'm just telling you, the guy's a novelty. He's a unicorn. He's like the Porzingis of Major League Baseball, as far as I'm concerned. I love the guy. I think he's awesome.
Chris in New Hampshire on the Bruins last night. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Good. Hey, just Chara. It seems like Chara's I love the Bruins, like Chara. It just seems like the last 6 weeks, when he's in the defensive zone, he's like the Statue of Liberty. When he gets the puck, it seems like he can't get rid of the puck fast enough. He either dumps it behind the net or makes a bad pass out, and usually it ends up on the other team's stick. And you know, it was a great goal he had last night, but even in the offensive zone, he gets caught out of position so many times. And then McAvoy is back there by himself on a 3-on-1 or a 2-on-1. Okay,
I don't see it. I don't see it, Chris. Thank you for the call. I don't see it. And I'm telling you, there's Chara sniping today. It's out there, Maz. And I don't get it. Yes, in game one, he pinched, and that cost him a goal. And I really put that more on McAvoy and Krejci. They made two really soft plays on Hyman on that goal in game one, but that was Chara's pinch. Other than that, he was a plus one last night. He scored only one of your two goals. He was not the issue. You had Torrey Krug, who was a -3, and Kevin Miller, who was a -3. And we're focusing on Chara, who was a plus one and scored one of your only two goals. And I thought showed real leadership. I thought that stuff on the bench with him getting into his team at one point there in the second was great. I thought he was physical in the corner. I liked Chara last night. Far from your problem. Why does I keep saying that. Why does the criticism go to him? I know why it goes to him. When you're 7 feet tall, that's where everyone goes. And, you know, when you're the captain and all of that, I get it. He was not the issue last night.
Well, and I also think that the way the game is played now, his lack of speed is glaring sometimes.
Yes, right.
Right? But it's the same is true of Backes. Like, you know, watch these guys fly around. Watch Backes getting dragged up the ice for crying out loud like he's got sandbags in his ass. Like, seriously, it takes him forever to get up the ice.
Travis at UConn, what do you got for us on the Bees?
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering what your take was on when Jack had that little meltdown last night when they had the stoppage on the Bees around the power play. I think Marchand was on the break. I think, I don't know, one guy on the Leafs went down to his knees and they just stopped the game for no reason. It just really pissed me off because there's no blood, there's no broken bones. I'm pretty sure he finished the game.
Okay, look, I think Toronto got a little home cooking last night, which is really not that surprising. But two is not the reason you lost the game, okay? Even though they blew that dead and they shouldn't have on that power play. I believe that was the same power play that you hit three posts. Pastrnak is wide open all alone on the left side with the entire net to shoot at, and he cranked it off the post. Marchand hit it, I think, deflected off of Anderson's glove and off the post. Then Pastrnak from Marchand had a clean break, and I think Anderson got it with the glove, and it just went over the bar. You had more than enough opportunities to score in that period on that power play and in that game. The refs are not why you lost. But I think that they got back to Toronto. The crowd was in a froth, and it got to those refs a little bit. Simple as that. Not why you lost.
See, I was going to say you had to know that was coming, though. On some level, some of that was coming, whether, you know, penalties that you drew that weren't called or chintzy ones against you, whatever it was.
Rick Nash had a partial break in the second where the guy grabbed his jersey, and they missed it. Like, there was one, too. Like, they just – so you didn't get the calls last night, which I think you should expect, but it's also not why you lost. How many chances did you have?
Oh, they had a ton of chances. They did. They had plenty of chances last night.
So I don't want to hear about the refs. Here's the Scott in Weymouth. As frustrating as the replay thing is to me, I don't need to hear about the refs. Scott in Weymouth. Go ahead, Scott.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm not calling about the refs. All right, first of all, this is what we got in this series. This is going 7, 100%. But real quick, if I could preface my call. Maz, I don't want to call you an idiot, but I disagree. David Backes is one of the top forwards in the NHL. I mean, if you'd throw him under the bus, because, oh, he's a little slow back-checking.
He's a little slow forward.
Let me get on my point. That's a ridiculous comment. David Backes is awesome.
Hello? He's slow as crap. That's not a ridiculous comment. Do you watch?
He's one of the top forwards in the NHL.
Huh?
Still?
What?
5 years ago, maybe.
You don't deserve more time, Cole.
I love Backes, too. All I said was he was slow.
Slow.
But to call him one of the top forwards in the NHL is a stretch.
Asinine.
Have you taken a good look at the league lately?
How long's your list? Double team him there, Mass.
I mean, holy crap. Like, you look at the young guys around the league now. We're all putting up these ridiculous point totals. Backes is one of the best forwards in the league? Please. He's not one of the top three forwards on his own team.
We have yet to get to the Patriots drama today. Has anyone showed up for practice today, Murray? Are Brady and Gronkowski still out?
They are not. They are still out.
Brady and Gronkowski still out. That is officially confirmed.
Yep.
Okay. Alan, Rhode Island, your thoughts?
Yeah, guys. So when it comes to the Patriots, this sustained run they've had is because of three factors: the coach, the quarterback, and the ownership. So what's changed? The coach made a mistake at the Super Bowl, right? He should have played Malcolm Butler. But he's consistent. This hasn't been the first time that Bill's made a contract issue and an attitude of a player has affected play time. What's changed? Well, Tom Cruise Brady, all of a sudden, apparently he needs money, so he wants to monetize his workout. And that's been causing a huge rift. Now, from an ownership standpoint, which I think has been underplayed on this whole thing, my understanding is that Bob has ceded a lot of this stuff to Jonathan Thanks Dad Kraft. And Jonathan, to me, is a shadow of his father, and he should have never backed Brady, and the ownership should have never backed Brady and the whole Garoppolo thing and forced Bill to make the trade.
So, I've got what? Go ahead, quickly.
No, for the future.
All right, Al, thanks for the call. The thing that I will agree with them, when we talk about the things that have changed and led to these current conditions. Belichick's probably gotten a little more egomaniacal. He certainly said, I have no patience to coach anyone who's an a-hole anymore. I only want to work with people I like. Okay, so certainly he's changed a little bit. Kraft has changed too. But who's changed the most?
Brady.
Tom Cruise Brady. Yes,
oh, it's easily Brady. I don't think there's any question. But in some ways, it's a miracle it stayed together this long. Because, of course, they're all going to change. They all start thinking that they're the reason why they've won, when the reality is it's the combination of them that's won. Because they all offset each other in some way, shape, or form, and ultimately they have the same values or goals in mind. So I just think that Brady's gone off the deep end, though. And to me, the real departure organizationally came when they chose Brady over Garoppolo. If you look at the history of how they've done things, and I've said this to you a million times, they almost always go with the longer view and the younger guy. Almost always. And I recognize that this was different. But at the most important position on the field, they broke their own rule.
Okay, and on John Kraft, quickly, that's a big factor. And John's going to have a hard time stepping into Robert's shoes. And there's going to be a transition there, and I don't discount it. I think John's in a tough spot, though. I mean, it's just, John's not the one who hired Belichick. John's not the one who's worked closely with Belichick over the 18 years. And would you blame Belichick if he says, I'm not answering to this kid? And that's nothing against Jonathan. It's just human nature. Just think of it out there, folks. If you work for a family business and you were hired by the father and you've worked with the father, and the next thing you know, the kid takes over. And now the kid is your boss and you got to answer to the kid. Maybe he's younger than you. How does that go? That's a tough spot. That's a tough spot for that kid. It usually doesn't work. And so I think they're going to have some of that with Jonathan Kraft, Maz. Let's pick this up on the other side after Murray's update.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
It's a palace cue.
A mutiny, a cue.
Tom Brady's playing hardball with his contract because he hates Belichick.
You know, I've heard rumblings that Brady's not in a hurry to help out the team.
A mutiny, a cue.
Belichick's cheap and won't re-sign Tom's favorite players.
Five key offensive players have all been allowed to walk out the door.
I gave money back to him. You know, he
he wasn't going to really come close to any of the other offers that I had, and, you know, he's an
bye-bye. Wish we could have kept you.
A mutiny. A cue.
And Gronk's going to retire because he hates Belichick for not letting him have any fun.
I'm definitely going to look at my future.
This started in training camp. He seriously considered stepping away from the game in training camp. He didn't enjoy himself in 2017. He was pissed.
It's a palace cue.
A mutiny. A cue. The Patriots. A coup.
New version, right, Murray?
Oh, there's a lot of material there. You got enough for the next month.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. I went through the last couple of weeks of, you know, Colin Cowherd stuff, Brady on GMA, Brady from Tom Versus Time, just all the talking heads, Tom Curran. I was like, oh, I can make a ton of these. Here's a lot for the Palace Queue.
Every day. Every day, baby.
A mutiny. A queue.
That's the Palace Queue Volume 2. I want at least a 5-part series, Murray. Okay,
so I'll keep at it.
We got two in the books. Here's someone. I'm sure you can add this audio coming up here to your Palace Q montages. Carlton in Tampa. Hi, Carlton.
Maz could not be more wrong about when this thing went south, but I called in today because I wanted to try to cheer up Pat Boy as his beloved Death Star absolutely implodes there in Boston. Okay, so Pat Boy, who cares that Danny Amendola, that all of his teammates thought that, you know, it was egregious that Bill didn't play a player that they all thought could help them win the Super Bowl. Who cares if Danny Amendola effectively confirmed that it was personal between Bill Belichick and Malcolm Butler? You know, who cares that Bill Belichick, that tool-bag coach of yours, threw Tom Brady under the bus 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago for his cheating scandal, Bill's cheating scandal? And that's when it all started to go south, by the way, Maserati. Who cares that Bill Belichick smeared Jamie Collins on the way out, who was well-liked in that locker room? Who cared that Bill Belichick smeared Malcolm Butler after Bill sat him in the Super Bowl and had to come up with some convoluted reason as to why he did it? So he inferred, or had his henchmen infer, that Malcolm Butler was using weed or had an altercation with coaches or were late for practice. Who cares about any of that, Catboy? You can always go back to your videotapes and watch. You know, when the Falcons had the greatest implosion in Super
Carlton,
Bowl history.
I can't give you more than 2 minutes. You got to land this plane. Go.
Okay. And you can go back and watch when they won 3 Super Bowls when they need the other team's defensive signals. And you are still young, Catboy. You can wait another 35 years for them to win another title, because that's how long it's going to take, Catboy. It's over.
It don't feel good right now.
Do you worry about it being over, Murray?
After this year, yeah, I do. Yeah, I think this is it. I think this is the last roundup. I mean, I think it'd be crazy not to be a little bit nervous. It feels like there's a lot of cracks here. It's obvious that the coach and the quarterback are not on the same page. It doesn't feel like that's going to get fixed anytime soon. Yeah, I think this is the last roundup.
I worry that it's over already. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they've played in their last Super Bowl together.
They're teetering a little bit.
I mean, so again, you look.
But
I'm not,
still, the competition is so bad.
Of course,
so little faith.
I'm not telling you they suck, but if you're asking me, are they ever going to get back to a Super Bowl together? I fear that it's already over. I do. I don't think it's wrong to say that.
Here's Bert in Connecticut with the Red Sox thought. Hi, Bert.
Hey guys, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Hey Maz, I wanted to ask you this last week, but we were talking about Vasquez and the fight and everything. Listen, I'm all for the Red Sox with this good start and stuff. I mean, it's great. I'm still worried about the eighth inning pitching. But I want to know, I guess I'm a nitpicker like you, and I hope I'm not alone when I say this. I'm looking for you to agree with me. Didn't you kind of think it was odd that last week in the middle of this thing that he benches Benny, who's been killing the Yankees, for a predetermined day off? I mean, this is ridiculous. I understand analytics and stuff, but this is ridiculous. I mean,
okay, so, Bert, we're going to answer you off here. The rotation in the outfield and getting J.D. Martinez in and all of this.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't like it. Did I think it was wildly unusual? No, because I think there are managers who sort of look at it and say, I'm going to plan it out for 4 days. But and look, Cora, in his defense, Cora said later in the year I might go with the hot hand. Right now I want to make sure I get everybody in there and get people there at bats. You know, it hasn't really cost him a game. I mean, So, you know, to me, I'd have kept going with Benintendi. I wouldn't have felt the need to get everyone in with all those off days, but this is the way he's going to do it. I get used to it.
If they need to get Martinez outfield reps, which apparently they promised him that they do it, Bradley's got to be the one that comes out.
Sure.
Got to be Bradley, in my opinion. Mike and Methuen on Bruins Leafs. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say this team is sort of built on depth. That's what everybody's been talking about. But I want to see more out of the second line. I mean, the top line can't do it every single night. If you go back to 0-11 when they won the Cup, they had two, you know, they had like a 1A and 1B between, I think the Krejci line was actually the top line, and
Bergie
and
yes.
Marchand were on the second line. But DeBrus seems to be doing his job. But Krejci, I mean, the puck just doesn't stay on his stick like it used to. I want more out of him. And definitely Rick Nash, who's kind of, you know, like you say, he plays small. And one other thing.
Well, hold on, Scott. We're up against it. Rick Nash, again, said everyone in Columbus and everyone with the Rangers feels like can give you more. Feels like can give you more. This has been his rap wherever he's been.
It struck me last night. Like, I sort of say, okay, well, what do you want? You think the first line's going to give you five goals every night? Like, that's what they're going to do? It's just not realistic. Sooner or later, there's going to be a night where they're off, where this just doesn't go right. They don't catch breaks. Or maybe they get checked harder and they get beat on a night. It happens. This is the whole point of having as many good players as you have. That when another matchup steps up and wins it. And look, you know, you said a while ago, Riley Nash hasn't looked right. And he just played his first game coming off an injury. I don't know. Maybe there's something going on with Rick Nash there, too.
Well,
after the concussion. Like, I don't think you can overlook that either.
I think you're just expecting more from Rick Nash, and that's not new. That's not new that you're expecting more from Rick Nash. On Krejci, he's got to finish last night. He had two opportunities in the second period, one early and one late. The one early, I think, would have been called back on a goalie interference. But, again, Frederik Andersen's lying there like a mermaid, and Krejci throws it right into him. And then the one late in the period was just that wonderful rush by Jake DeBrusk up the left boards. Just awesome. Brilliant stuff. And Krejci's wide open on the other side of the net, and he whiffs on the whole puck. He's got to finish those, no question about it. You watch the Bruins and their playoff success, the cliche is as Krejci goes, they go. And when you look at it, it's true. So he's a big one, no question about it. It would be nice if 61 showed up, though, on the other side.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
You know, I know how hard it is to get out there every fifth day just pitching. And he's got a laundry list of other things to do in terms of hitting. I don't know if I'd like to do it, but it's impressive. You know, he throws 100 miles an hour and he can take it deep at the same time. That's, if you don't respect that, I don't know who you are or what you're doing.
Chris Sale on Shohei Ohtani, who goes tonight against the Red Sox.
Yeah, I just think it's a great story. This guy's good for the game. He is. He's good for the game.
Does he throw 100?
He does, 99, 100 miles an hour.
He throws 100?
He does.
And he's got like that split, right? He's got that
filthy split.
Fall off the table split.
Filthy. Absolutely freaking filthy.
He throws 100.
Triple X filthy.
His fastball's 100?
Yes, 99, 100 miles an hour. He hits 100.
He's hit 100 so far this year.
Yeah, I don't think he pitches at 100, but he can hit 99, 100. I've seen him hit 100. I mean, on a highlight, I've seen him hit 100.
Yeah.
You know, I saw 99 too, but he's in that area. You know, so his fastball has that kind of velocity. The split, to me, it splits his best pitch. I mean, it's going 90, and then it just drops off the table. It's what he gets all the strikeouts on. And, you know, a lot of the Japanese guys have good splits. So you're hearing a lot of hype about his slider, too. I think his breaking ball needs a little work. It's not quite as good as everyone is saying. I think, to me, that's where the hyperbole is coming in. But his fastball and his split are nasty. And the split is nasty.
And he has three home runs with an 1,100 OPS.
Hit a triple and a double.
Hitting .367.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, it's awesome.
It's awesome.
Like, I don't know if they have steroids in Japan or not. I got to believe that they do. And if this guy's on them, I don't care. Like, seriously, what else can he do? Can he play shortstop? I want to know. Put him out there.
So, again, that's tonight against David Price. Scott in Connecticut, I just hit the wrong button. Call us back. Scott in Connecticut had a thought on David Price. Call me back at 617-779-0985. Jimmy, unless you can save him real quick, we have that special thing you can do. Because I literally just hit the wrong button and made a mistake. So if you can pop him back up, let me know. Otherwise, call me back. I did not mean to hang up on you, sir. My fault. Chris in Bridgewater on the Bees. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. I know that the refs have, like, obviously
gotten a lot stronger on the faceoffs this year, but Bergeron's been kicked 10 times between the first two games on the faceoff, and it's getting a little ridiculous. Like, just drop the puck. I just want to see him play. That's all I want, you know?
I'm glad you brought this up, because I think this has been noticeable from game one. And you know who I credit this for, who I think about when I see this?
Babcock.
Babcock. Absolutely. Babcock. This is Babcockian. That it's just, this is exactly... Well, that's why you pay him $8 million a year. That's why he's the highest paid coach in the league. In
hockey. You notify the officials before the series begins.
Right, and it's Babcock on the line, so you take the call versus Harry Schmedlap, some nobody. And this is why you have Mike Babcock. And I think it's gotten to pass. I'm just trying to look up the faceoff numbers. He was 48% last night. I don't know how many of that was against Plekanec, but let me just look at Plekanec was 45%. So they didn't, obviously weren't squaring off against each other all night, but Bergeron was below 50% last night. I don't have the series numbers in front of me, but it feels like he's been sub-50 the entire series. And they're tossing him out left, right, and center. And Marchment, I'm sorry, sucks on the dot, and Pastrnak can't do it, as we learned in that L.A. Kings game the first week of the season.
Yes, that goal they gave up in the final second.
So Marchand has to take the draws, except he didn't, I guess he didn't take any last night. But, yeah, that's an issue, and I think that's Babcock's getting someone here. Someone's here. Absolutely.
I mean, if something like that that's happening, before they even drop a puck, that's got to be the coach to, telling someone ahead of time, watch out for this, and they did.
Anthony in Amherst on the Bees. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, I just want to talk about the loss of Grizzlick. I think it's going to affect us long-term if he's out for a while, just because, he's a good puck-moving defenseman. He's a plus 21 this year. With him out, you're slotting in Holden, who's like the slowest defenseman on the team with McQuaid. So, if he's out long term, it can really hurt the boys. And, David Krejci, where are you, buddy? Thanks, boy. Okay. Listen to your response on the air. Thanks.
Thanks. Keep an eye on Grizzlick. I don't think Holden was that bad last night.
Oh, I thought he was slow. I couldn't agree more with the caller.
Really?
That combo with him and McQuaid looks, that feels shaky to me. And Grizzlick, it's a lower, mysterious lower body thing, Maz? You were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah, right? Lower body thing that apparently he suffered in game two. And he played through it, but then obviously they scratch him for game three.
So, they've obviously preferred Grizzlick over him. It's a little bit of a hit. Last night, your issue was Torrey Krug and Kevin Miller. They were each minus three. So I'm surprised by I'm stunned by the Zdeno Chara chirping. Like, just wrong night. And even the Nick Holden thing. Nick Holden held it. He held his own. You throw him into the lineup, he was fine. As your sixth defenseman, I don't think he killed you. He was plus one on the night. He only played 12 minutes. I don't think he was a huge factor in the game. Krug got caught up the ice, and Kevin Miller, those guys were the issue. Those were the issue in the game. Joe in Dorchester has a Red Sox thought. Hi, Joe.
How you doing, guys? I was kind of confused about the other day when Mookie Betts got injured. They moved Jackie Bradley to right instead of Benintendi. Is that a sign that they're going to trade Bradley soon and saying that Benintendi's the center fielder of the future?
Okay, interesting.
So, Joe, I found that interesting, too, and I couldn't find a comment from Cora on it, but I think that
Do you disagree with the logic?
I think the short answer is right field's a bigger area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the short answer.
Or it's a harder adjustment from playing the wall at Fenway to playing right field than it is from playing center to right.
Right, and in center at Fenway, you really only have to worry about right center. You don't have to worry about left center. And again, anything in the air over there, you just stop and play it off the wall. So they deem right field in a lot of ways to be the harder place.
It is.
So they, but then that raises the question of why isn't Bradley in right field all the time, right? And I think ultimately they probably view Bradley and Betts as interchangeable.
I think they view Betts as maybe even better.
Maybe.
I've read the advanced metrics. Apparently Mookie Betts saved more runs defensively than any player in baseball last
year. Correct. Yeah, correct. And I think that's 2 years running. I think he did the year
before. Is that right?
Yeah. So, but I think the short answer is, again, the bigger field's in right field, and they'd rather have Bradley there than Benintendi.
Adam in the car, give me a Bruins thought.
Yeah, guys, just watching the game last night, a couple things. One, I think as a player, when you end up potting 12 goals in the first two games, you get a little loose with the stick. I think that's why. I think Freddie Anderson didn't steal the game last night, but he definitely stole the third period, right? I think we can agree on that.
Yes.
I think the other thing, about this series so far is a lot of the problems are fixable by the Bruins. We're talking about a stretch pass where Toronto continues to burn you. Well, let's just not pinch as much. The other thing I see a bit of an issue with the Bruins is their ability to you know, get through the neutral zone. They tend to, I'm watching them go D to D a lot. They're not getting a lot of clean ups as Toronto is. I think that that's also something they can fix just with some movement, but I think that happens on the back end. I think the other caller said, I agree with him. The loss of Grizzlick, just with his skating, I just think matches up best or better in this series with, you know, Toronto's, you know, fast skating or, you know, mobile forwards.
Okay, Adam, I'm going to cut you off there. You just gave me like 14 different things. I'll give you the biggest fix the Bruins can do going game 3 to game 4. I'll do that right after Murray's update. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.